Welcome to Georgia Focus. I'm John Clark on the Georgia News Network. The Top 10 Issues to Watch is an annual publication of the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. Every year we feature the list of issues on the show, and the list of issues for 2022 was released Friday. And here to talk about those issues this year are Dr. Dana Rickman. She is president of the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education, and Dr. Robert Gaines. He is the director of external affairs. And welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and Happy New Year.
It wouldn't be the new year without you guys coming on. We start out, we have you on every show. And Dana, how long have we been doing this?
Well, I've been doing it with you since 2012. And okay. So I think you even did it before then. So a good long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So at least a decade.
It's good to have you again. And I know the list has been released. Robert, talk about who gets this report every year and what are your goals for distributing it?
So every year we give the report out our primary stakeholder audience. It would be legislators. So we ensure that each representative and senator has a copy. We also share it with professors at a lot of the USG institutions who are teaching policy classes. We get requests from superintendents. We give out copies to folks who are a part of our education policy fellowship program. And then throughout the course of the first quarter of the year, we get emails from teachers and communications folks from school districts, all of whom are always eager to have it, which is exciting. In December, every year before it comes out, we start getting emails, and it just reaffirms that this is still of value.
Dana, how do you determine the issues?
Throughout the entire year, we kind of keep a running list of, you know, different hot topics and what people are talking about, either through the legislative session or through the State Department of Education, or if there's like new research coming out. But then, you know, around August or September of each year, we pull together what we call an ad hoc policy committee. And it's all the other education advocates, other state education agency leaders, and just talk to people who are sort of in the know about what's happening in education and workforce development. And we ask them, and we just say, so what do you guys think? And we sort of have a great discussion and pull the list together. And usually there's more than 10. And we sort of talk through, you know, what's the real driving issues going to be? And so we tend to pick issues that we think, you know, people are going to be talking about and need to understand. But then every year we always try to raise up a couple of issues that people aren't talking about that we feel that they really should, and try to bring, you know, issues to light to really try to focus the discussion.
Are these in any particular order?
These are a little bit in particular order, and not in terms of priority, mm-hmm. but sort of grouped in, like, the first couple really focus on sort of foundational things, and then, you know, grouped by things that districts can do and grouped by workforce development. And so it's more of an order of organization, not so much priority.
Right.
So things are all high priority.
Definitely. We'll dig right into the issues then. Issue number one is called equity, shifting mindset and strategy. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, John, last year's top 10 issue, we really dug into how the pandemic had a disproportionate negative effect on the most vulnerable of Georgians. And so now almost two years into this pandemic, we know now that it has really worsened the underlying educational and economic challenges confronting our most vulnerable Georgians. So low-income students and families, students of color, rural residents, workers lacking any sort of post-secondary training, you know, that sort of thing. And so the resulting disparities in education and workforce opportunities are really continuing to threaten not only personal well-being of the individual, but, you know, community resilience to respond to crises and, you know, Georgia's long-term economic security. And so this first issue really sort of sets the stage about shifting a mindset. And when I talk about equity, I want to be clear, the way the Georgia Partnership defines equity, we define it as the allocation of appropriate resources and tools for all Georgians to succeed. And really, we believe it's the primary driver of individual prosperity and state economic growth. And so digging into that is thinking of an equity mindset. We think about it two ways. It's a mindset that state policymakers, advocates, educators really use when identifying different barriers and expanding access to education and workforce opportunities. But a second way is that it's really an element of state policy and local practice. So thinking about how do you remove barriers to access and resources, and then how do you ensure that everybody has what they need to succeed?
Issue number two is unfinished instruction. It also has equity in it, equity through acceleration. So what is the difference is there?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody has been talking about it. What we know, we hear the common, like, learning loss, lost learning time, you know, the effect of the pandemic of students who were either out of school for an extended period of time or interrupted instruction as they switched to virtual learning and different access points. But we wanted to take a step back and really properly define that. And what it really is unfinished instruction, right? Unfinished instruction describes official definition, combination of teaching and learning within an academic year that fails to provide students with the opportunity to achieve or demonstrate grade level proficiency. So that's what we're really talking about with the impact of the pandemic. But if you take a step back, that there's all kinds of unfinished instruction that goes on where students aren't learning up to their potential. And there's sort of two ways that you can address that. You can do the common way is remediation, right? The schools often focus on foundational skills. They hold students back, repeat grades, and that approach is called remediation. A second emerging approach is called accelerated learning, which really looks forward. The teachers continue to deliver grade level content while additional interventions or tutors provide supplemental academic support. And so it sort of reframes this idea of how to either catch students up if they miss something, or accelerate students if they were already behind. And what typically happens when you think about equity is students who are behind tend to get remediated, and students who are ahead, like, you know, gifted and talented students or jumping ahead, like they get accelerated learning. But the truth is accelerated learning is incredibly effective for students who are even behind. And so it really involves personalized instruction based on student needs. And so we want to sort of flip the script and think about if we looked at it from accelerated learning for everybody, that a lot of these equity problems would go away and students would be catching up and you know, succeeding a lot faster.
Do you think the virtual learning has impacted that, where you can't do the in-person instruction? And we're looking at now, some school systems are saying they're going back to virtual learning for now. You think that's impacted that?
It has. And I think there's sort of a double-edged sword to the virtual learning. It clearly is not, I think in-person learning is our best approach. But I think virtual learning, that there's some great takeaways that we can take in terms of using technology and the virtual space to really help deliver personalized instruction. And so the trick is to figure out where virtual learning is a benefit and how to deliver it with high quality support. And I think that's what Georgia is still figuring out. Yeah. But I think, you know, you mentioned we're in the first week of January now, a couple of metro districts are flipping back to all virtual. This transition has gone a lot smoother than, you know, the first time we had to flip to virtual. So schools are learning. Educators are learning, families are adjusting, and so I think it's just another tool in the toolbox to keep everybody where they need to be.
The third issue we're looking at is non-academic barriers, the school's role. Talk more about that.
This issue is not one that anyone who's close to education would be surprised to learn, that what happens outside of the school oftentimes affects what happens in school, particularly as it relates to students' learning experiences. And so this issue is looking at the outside forces, or what we call social determinants, that really shape students' learning, and what we can do to ensure that education stakeholders, folks who are in the community and in the schools, can provide interventions and supports for those students. So just to give you some context, in 2019, 20% of Georgia school-age children lived in households with incomes at or below the federal poverty level. And at that time, if you want to use a family of four as your measure, it's about $25,000 a year, roughly $26,000 a year. And you've got a significant percentage of your students who are coming into school who are living in poverty. You have a number of students who are on free reduced lunch. And there are a lot of environmental circumstances that are impeding their ability to really learn at the level they're probably capable of learning. So the question is, if we can ensure that our teachers and our folks who are in the school are aware and trained well enough to identify some of these issues, mobilize those folks, but then also mobilize the community around addressing the barriers and centering the schools as a resource, maybe not as the exact location where you will get the support, but a place where you can learn about how to get support, then we think schools will serve their students a little bit more effectively. And I think if you take a step back and you look at why would we want schools to do this? Well, first and foremost, I think it's the right thing to do. If you know you have students whose ability to learn is being impeded by external factors and you can do something about it, and you can help those students graduate and become employable citizens, then we've done our jobs as far as education goes. I also think if you look at the federal support that has come down in light of the pandemic to support school systems to kind of get back up and running in light of all the challenges that have come with COVID-19, we're in a narrow window of time to use what is a multi-billion-dollar investment to really try some new things, pilot some programs, to tackle some of these issues. So the timing is right now. And then lastly, for the dollars and cents people in the world who always want to know what's the return on the investment, one of the things we noted in this particular issue is that if you can identify student challenges and you can provide the wraparound services and interventions, you're making a smart investment, because for every dollar invested, you're saving $3 in government spending on social, educational, public health, and correctional programs. So, you know, there's an ethical component, there's a financial component, and we understand that if students' needs are not being addressed and we're expecting them to learn and perform at a high level without talking about those issues and doing something about those issues, we are not serving our students to the best of our ability.
The fourth issue then, to that, improving the community around the schools and having the community impact at school, is improving the school culture, the imperative of school leaders. It takes strong leaders to make this happen.
Absolutely. So one of the interesting things about schools and learning is everyone would tell you teachers are the most important factor in student outcomes. But second to teachers would be school principals. And oftentimes they're overlooked when we're talking about improving student performance. But when you have the right principal, then you've got a person who can create the right conditions for learning to happen, and for those teachers to be in a prime position to succeed with their students. So when you look at what a principal actually does, why they're imperative to improving school culture, these are the folks who are recruiting and retaining effective teachers, ensuring their success in the classroom. They're the ones creating the conditions for a positive school climate. They're motivating school staff. They're really enhancing teacher practices. And this is something that's become even more pronounced in the midst of the pandemic. When chaos erupts, when things are not as stable as they normally are, you need strong leadership. So really what we're getting at in this issue is how school leaders can hone their skills to cultivate those conditions in schools that really make the culture and the climate vibrant, so that not only are student needs being met, but the teachers' needs are being met. And when those things are happening in concert, you really get high quality outcomes. And one of the other things that we also understand, as you know, John, from the previous issue around non-academic barriers, there's a high quality leader. That leader is able to pull in those stakeholders who are not in the school building all day. So those parents and those community members who want to have a voice. A strong school leader can integrate the voices of those stakeholders and pair it with the student needs and the teacher needs and really create an environment where everyone is invested and you're getting the outcomes that you want. So that's really what that issue is about.
And John, I would add, this is one of those issues I mentioned at the beginning that, you know, I don't think people talk about enough. I think it's a critical issue that's not getting enough, where I think everybody understands the importance of a positive school climate, but I don't think people really realize how important the necessary skill set it is for school leaders and district leaders too. And I don't think we support them enough, you know, from a state level of thinking about what supports do they need? What kind of training do they need? What are the right competencies for these leaders? You know, that sort of thing. I think that needs to be a much more elevated discussion to put forth.
And of course, funding. It takes funding to do everything. That's the bottom line in many cases. And that is issue number five, funding school transformation on a deadline.
Yeah, you know, John, we talk about funding almost every year in the top 10 in some way, shape, or form. But this year is obviously a little bit different, right? This issue focused really on the use of federal funds, specifically the ESSER dollars, the Elementary and Secondary Emergency Relief, the CARES Act. It has a bunch of different names. The state has received, you know, close to $6 billion to go into the school districts to help them survive this crisis and to do pretty much, you know, innovative things. And so, what do districts do? They don't have a ton of capacity to figure out how to spend a lot of money in a relatively quick amount of time. And so we provide some suggestions where the individual districts, they need to sort of, you know, establish a vision for improvement, right? And then implement strategies that will lead them to that vision, and then support school level processes that will need to change to achieve the success. But the challenge for districts is that they have to balance sort of two competing needs. They have to meet their current needs because they're trying to put out fires all over the place, right? What are the immediate things that they need to shore up? But at the same time, they have to plan for long-term success. So what do they need to be doing now to ensure things are different 5 years from now? And so school and district leaders need to be asking themselves, in 5 years, what will be fundamentally different about teaching and learning in my school due to these use of these one-time federal funds? Right? Because the funds are going to go away. And so they have to think about long-term sustainability. But if they're looking for big transformational change, now is the time to do it. And so this issue goes into some details and some suggestions about where they might want to start and how to do that.
That goes in nicely to number six, accountability. What's the future look like?
And this one's funny because we seem to always be talking about accountability too, and it's the driest of topics. But you know, during the pandemic, the state leaders have really paused the accountability system that we have. You know, we did 1 year without any high stakes testing at all. We did have testing this past year, you know, end of grade, end of course test, just to get a sense of where students were, but was not used for any kind of accountability. So accountability is on a pause right now. And so that allows for districts to do exactly what we were just talking about, to innovate and not worry about, you know, test scores and that kind of thing. Like, they can really just, you know, be creative. But it also creates a problem. And I don't think people have been very excited about the accountability system we had in place going into the pandemic. And our state superintendent has announced that he really wants to see a new accountability system. But we haven't seen any proposals as to what that would look like. So we do need accountability. We need to understand what's working, what's not working, how to help schools improve, how, you know, celebrate those that are successful. And so it's hard work, but we need to have a state discussion about, so what do we want from our schools? What should a new accountability system look like? What do we value as a state to hold up for success? And so those discussions need to happen pretty quickly, because we're gone 2 years now without any sort of accountability. Yeah. And so we need to understand what we're doing and where we want to go.
And of course, early learning is very important, getting off to a great start. And that is issue number 7, which is early learning, protecting investments in early learners.
This is one of those perennial topics, John, where we understand that we've got to keep beating this drum, because on the front end of the birth to work pipeline, you're talking about young children who need to be in an environment where they're being challenged, where they're learning, where they are being exposed to the things that will prepare them for the K-12 experience. And one of the things that I want to be sure that we do is acknowledge how well Georgia has led in this space since the early 90s, when we made the initial investment, and fast forward to now with Georgia Pre-K. We've had a lot of success. We've invested a significant amount of money in the Georgia Pre-K program and have served almost 2 million four-year-olds. And I think we have a great track record of success and are considered a pioneer in this field. And at the same time, when we look at the landscape, we're seeing some major challenges, a lot of which have been exacerbated by the pandemic. And so if you look at the challenge of recruiting and retaining high-quality workers, which I know is not unique to the early learning space, we're seeing this across industries, but it's very difficult right now to recruit and retain people for these positions. Part of the reason being the pay and the benefits are not really up to par. We're also seeing challenges with the lack of access to affordable childcare for the public. So you've got people who need childcare who are struggling. When you look at both of those issues and just the higher level issue through the equity lens, our deepest concern is that if the workforce trends continue in the way that they're going, we're going to have fewer students of color and low income students receiving high quality early learning in the long term. And that is not a great scenario for our workforce if you fast forward 50, 20 years. And it also creates challenges for our K-12 teachers who are working with students who may not quite be as far along as they should. So what we're looking at right now is that if Georgia is really going to continue to lead in this space and continue to see positive outcomes, we have to shift our mindset from relying on low-wage workers to serve the majority population to placing a value on a diverse, skilled workforce, which means investing in the quality of the preparation and increasing the pay, providing health insurance, figuring out creative ways to bring people into the industry, folks who want to stay, folks who have the credentials to be quality teachers, and really creating an environment and incentives for those people to come in and to stay in the industry so that we can improve the outcomes for children, families, and all the communities that these folks are serving in.
That really goes well into issue number 8, which is revamping the teaching profession, a new moonshot. Talk about that one.
Well, I love the title, first of all. I think it's such a great illustration of the magnitude of what it is we're trying to do. I mean, getting a man to the moon, a person to the moon in the 60s was a pretty ambitious goal for President Kennedy. We would say maybe not an equally analogous, but changing the teaching profession is a monumental task. So when we talk about changing the teaching profession, our three policy focuses are really on recruiting and hiring, ensuring that on the front end of the pipeline of recruiting, we have high quality folks coming in, and then we're keeping these people. And then we're also creating some diversity within the teaching workforce. There's a lot of research that shows that when students have teachers that look like them, they sometimes do better academically. We also want to ensure that the teacher leadership programs that exist are robust, and that teachers who are doing well can continue to grow and not be pulled out of the classroom to to be administrators, but they can cultivate the skills of folks who also want to stay in the classroom around them. And then we also want to talk about professional learning opportunities. How do we redistribute teaching load so that teachers can spend some time enhancing their instructional techniques, or they can collaborate, trying new strategies and new practices with their colleagues? Because at the end of the day, we understand, again, as we noted earlier, that teachers are one of the most critical variables in the student performance equation. And if we can't figure out a way to really improve the quality of teachers that are coming in and hold on to those folks, again, we're going to find ourselves in a very, very difficult circumstance. And with that equity piece, we know that not all students have access to high quality teachers. And that's something that must be addressed, especially when you look at the fact that students who oftentimes have the highest needs have the most inexperienced teachers in their classrooms. And that's just one of many, many challenges that we're seeing because of this issue. So the moonshot, yeah, we're trying to make a big change. And I think if the political will is there and the resources are there, we can make it happen.
And then, of course, education is the foundation for having a good workforce. Issue number 9 is workforce readiness, a strategy that pays off.
Issues 7, 8, and 9 together really focus on various aspects of the workforce system, the early learning workforce, the K-12 teacher workforce. And then issue 9, this final one, really describes or digs into how Georgia can better align post-secondary access and success and workforce training systems to increase the number of credentials and degrees awarded. Georgia's made some progress in that area, getting more and more of our adult population, you know, degrees. When we say degree, any kind of like associate's degree, four-year degree, credential, I mean, that's where the jobs are. And so Georgia really needs a comprehensive sort of long-range post-secondary education and jobs plan that really encourages both recent high school graduates and current working adults to complete what we think of as credentials of value, certificates, degrees that really align with the high demand, high wage careers that we have in Georgia. And also really thinking about multiple sort of formal and informal exits and on-ramps into the post-secondary system and into workforce. I think most of our state policies around post-secondary really have a really traditional vision of college and thinking about providing a four-year degree for 18-year-olds graduating from high school and going straight into college. And that's not all that typical anymore. You have people who take time off. You have adults that need retraining. You have folks that go to internships first. And there's all sorts of dual degree programs. There's now stackable credentials where you could get a nano credential and work for a while and go back. You have for career ladders. And so there's a lot of different opportunities right now in Georgia that I think people don't know about. And so how do we sort of coordinate them into almost like a roadmap to give people a sense of how and where they can go with different careers? And I think that's going to be sort of critical from really providing the talent that we need for our workforce readiness system and really to be able to respond to the changing economy.
The 10th issue, and we always, there's always a rural component because there's always concern for the rural education systems. And issue number 10 is called rural transformation.
Rural leaders are now sort of facing almost a once in a lifetime opportunity, kind of like the rest of us, to figure out how to leverage multi-sector relationships and utilize a lot of these federal COVID relief funds to create sort of cooperative strategies to increase community resilience and really respond to the destabilizing effect that COVID has had, but prepare for the next, economic shock or destabilizing effect. So this issue, we tried to highlight sort of 5 barriers to community resilience and things like challenging demographics, lack of access to healthcare, poverty, education and workforce opportunities, and, you know, there's elements of racial distrust as well. But instead of coming at it from poor rural, I think there's great assets in rural and there's great opportunities in rural because it's relatively less, it is obviously less populated than urban, but people know each other. Like they know their neighbors, they know what their resources are. And so they can address a lot of these barriers through coordinated action and cooperative funding and can really set an example for the rest of us about how to do sort of this multi-sector approach to revitalization. And so I think that there's some great learnings that we can have in rural Georgia and how they can cooperate and become sort of regional hubs to raise up revitalization. And so I'm looking for actually a lot from rural Georgia to help all of us learn how to do some of this.
Well, there they are. This year for 2022, the top 10 issues to watch in education. And it'll be interesting to watch. And I know both of you will be watching them very, very closely. If listeners want to find out more about it and read the report, where can they find that?
DPEE.org. If you go to that website in our navigation menu, you will see reports. If you click there, you will have access to not only the 2022 edition, but all the way back to 2020, I believe. And we've got them archived. So if you want to read further back, we can help you out as well.
Well, thank you both. It's good to talk to you. I hope it's not another year before we talk, but I know we'll plan to do this again next year. But I hope to see you both maybe before then. Today, we've been discussing the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education's Top 10 Issues to Watch in Education. It's their annual publication that just came out on Friday. Our guests have been Dr. Dana Rickman, she is a president, and Dr. Robert Gaines, he is the Director of External Affairs, both with the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. And I thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next week right here on your local radio station on Georgia Focus.